It's time to get informed and inspired. This is Saturday Morning Live, sponsored by Asset Advisors LLC, Linden Sheet Metal, and TheFourthCorner.com. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety. Opinions and information expressed are those of the host and or sponsors and do not necessarily reflect those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Good morning, Whatcom County and the Fourth Corner. How are you this morning? This is Charlie Crabtree, and I'm this morning's host and the publisher of the Fourth Corner. And looking at the weather outside, I hope you'll stick with us for an hour and then get out and do summer-type things. It's great weather. Thanks again, though, to our sponsors for the show, Asset Advisors, Linden Sheet Metal, and TheFourthCorner.com. This morning, we are privileged and lucky enough to have our Secretary of State for the state of Washington, Kim Wyman, for the full hour. This office is where elections are managed and reported for Washington State, for those that don't know. She was reelected to this position this last November for another four-year term. She does a lot more than elections, but we're going to have a conversation about her knowledge and job concerning elections. We've got something that we're calling Making It Easier to Vote and Harder to Cheat to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about voter fraud, what the definition is and how it gets reported, and we're going to move on from there. But before we do all of that, I'd like to take an initial break right now so that we get as much time with the Secretary of State as we possibly can until the bottom of the hour. So here we go. I love it. Let's just listen to that music. We're back, and we're bad here at the Fourth Corner and at Whatcom County Saturday Morning Live. This morning, we've got with us the Secretary of State for Washington State. And Whatcom County is proud to have her this morning. We're going to talk about something called Making It Easier to Vote and Harder to Cheat. We're going to talk about general things as far as the elections are concerned. But first of all, I would just like to introduce the Secretary of State with a little bit about her and her bio. Kim Wyman is Washington's 15th Secretary of State, first elected in 2012. She is only the second female Secretary of State in Washington's history. Prior to being elected to this office, Kim served as Thurston County Elections Director for nearly a decade and served three terms as elected Thurston County Auditor. As head of one of the most diverse offices in state government, Secretary Wyman is responsible for overseeing state and local elections, corporations, and charity filings. The Washington State Library, the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library, and the Washington State Archives. Secretary Wyman is committed to promoting civility and civic engagement and connecting people with their government. So here we go. How are you doing this morning, Kim Wyman?
I'm doing great, Charlie. How are you doing?
I'm good with this kind of weather, finally. The long darkness of both COVID and a winter seeming to be over with, hopefully.
Hopefully. I agree.
So let's just get started by a short summary of what the Secretary of State's office does, and then what it does in elections and how it's organized as far as elections are concerned.
Okay, that's a lot. The Secretary of State's office is really a diverse part of state government in that I oversee kind of things that aren't related to each other. I think there are two parts of the office most Washingtonians are very familiar with. If you have a business or a nonprofit or charity, you probably deal with our Corporations and Charities Division and do annual filings of your, you know, your corporate papers. And this is a public service, so people can find out about entities they want to do business with. I also oversee state elections, but I'll come back to that in a moment. We have the State Library and the State Archives, which really house our state's history. So we have everything from books and authors that, are from Washington or are about Washington to, you know, all of our state's history and documents, including our state's constitution, the original bills signed into law by the governors, the original court cases signed by the members of the Supreme Court, that type of thing. So, you know, the office is very diverse, and that's why I love my job. But the thing I think most people are most familiar with is the oversight of our state's elections. So our state here in Washington has a very decentralized system. And in that, what I mean by that is that I oversee the overall operation of elections here at the state level. So my office works closely with 39 county auditors and in King County, the election director, who are all independently elected like I am. They run by county. I run statewide. And then my office's responsibilities are for things like the state voter registration database, which is one single master list of every voter in the state of Washington. The counties use that list to actually conduct their elections, and they're the ones who are doing the data entry and entering updates to voter records and keeping that list up to date. So it's a real partnership there. But the actual conduct of the election happens at the county level. Each county auditor is responsible for everything from setting up an election, printing ballots, getting the ballots to each individual voter, and then receiving them, counting them, producing results. Secretary of State's office does the certification and training of all election officials in the state, and we certify the election tabulation system. So those systems that count ballots, our office certifies those systems. And then finally, probably the most substantial responsibility I have as Secretary of State is I have the rulemaking authority in law. So when the legislature passes a law in the revised code of Washington, usually that's kind of a 30,000-foot level policy statement, and all of the details of how you implement the law go into our the Washington Administrative Code, or WAC. And so we here in the Secretary of State's office have the ability to write those rules in the Administrative Code that drive how we conduct elections, how we do business. And then finally, you know, the 39 counties are, and in partnership with us, do voter outreach and education. So that's a quick overview of what my office does and what how we relate to the counties.
Well, we appreciate that very much. So let's get right into the meat of this. We're talking about making it easier to vote and harder to cheat. And one of the things that have come up, I have to tell you that I was kind of surprised here in Whatcom County on this last election cycle, in that we had two candidates who won the primary and lost the general. And 2 years before that, we had the same thing happen. So, you know, I have been a geek in elections since about 2002. And I was a little concerned about what went on and what happened. So let's start with just what is a legalistic definition of election fraud as far as an individual or a group is concerned?
Well, you know, the term voter fraud has been thrown around so carelessly, in my opinion, over the last probably 25 years, that I think people just sort of assume that it means any kind of cheating related to elections. Right. But when you're really talking about it in a legal framework, voter fraud is activities that are designed to try to attempt to change the outcome of an election. And, you know, I think if we start from that framework, you know, what's the intent of the action? You know, are you trying to stuff the ballot box? Are you trying to eliminate votes for a candidate or an issue that you don't want counted? You know, things like that, activities that would be designed to try to change the outcome of the election.
Right. So it, as I, maybe you can clarify something for me, as I read some of the law, it says, you know, if you want to report or challenge a person's right to vote or their vote, you have to submit a lot of things. Who is the complainant here, and how does that process of reporting or dealing with what you believe to be voter fraud managed?
So remember, I guess the first place to start is that the goal of our election system overall in Washington State is to, you know, have people have confidence in our elections. And the way we've done that as a state, and I think we've done it very well, I know there are many people that might disagree with that statement, but is we balance access and security. And so our voter registration challenge statutes are very much designed with that in mind. So we want to make sure that Charlie Crabtree believes that his vote wasn't canceled by someone who wasn't eligible to vote, for example. Right. And so those statutes are designed to allow any registered voter in the state or prosecuting attorney in the state that is aware of some sort of illegal activity to have a mechanism to be able to report it and act on it. And so I think the first piece of that, though, is the very first line of that section of the statute, which reads, registration of a person as a voter is presumptive evidence of his right, his or her right to vote.
So our statute. And let me interrupt, just if I could, for
mm-hmm,
a second.
Sure.
So registration of a person, does a person have to show their ID to become registered, in the state of Washington at this point?
Yes, they have since 2006 in the state of Washington.
They show their identification at the auditor's office?
I appreciate you asking this question as a lead, so let's start there, and we'll come back to voter registration challenge. So obviously everyone remembers that lived here, remembers the 2004 governor's race. Very close race, 2.7 million ballots cast, two statewide recounts, 3 6-month-long court case, and Governor Gregoire won by 133 votes. Now, 17 years later, half the state still believes that election was stolen from them. So.
Yep.
Definitely get this. So when we go to the aftermath of 2004, one of the reforms that came out of that was requiring some form of ID at the time of registration because we're a vote-by-mail state now. And, you know, this is really important that you want to show that the people on the rolls are actual people and not just made up, you know, entities that someone could stuff the ballot box with.
Right.
So since 2006, and it was day forward, if you were registered before 2006, you didn't have to do this. But every registration we've taken since 2006, the applicant has to provide either their Washington State driver's license number, their Washington State ID card number, okay, or the last four digits of their Social Security number.
Let me clarify then. Do they have to show a picture ID?
Two of the three of those are picture ID. So
Which?
So last four of your social is not a picture ID. No, we do not have that. But I can tell you the vast majority of our applicants, 98%, provide one of those three forms. And the reason that Social Security is a relevant ID form is because you have to go into a government office in person, and you have to apply and provide information that proves your identity. So,
okay.
And then if you can't do one of those three IDs, we do have alternative IDs that the voter can submit. The vast majority of people do one of the first three.
Okay. So challenging a registration is one thing, and then challenging, is there another way to challenge a vote or a voter?
No. Oh, so going back to the voter registration challenge, so the idea and the premise of our laws is that, you know, if you fill out a form and you attest to an oath that says you're eligible, you're registered to vote. Now, if we have another registered voter who is aware that either, you know, say the person is not a U.S. citizen or the person doesn't reside at the house they're registered in or that they are convicted of a felony and actually in a Department of Corrections institution right now, if you have evidence of any of those things and the burden of proof is on the challenger, then you can file a voter registration challenge with the county auditor. And there is a formal process that we go through where the auditor makes a determination, unless we're in an election, an active election, and then it goes to the county canvassing board. So there is, and it's a public process. It is a high bar, but it is possible, and the burden of proof is on the challenger.
Okay, so basically, the Secretary of State's office and the local counties, I imagine, is who's involved with this, take a more reactive than proactive ploy when it comes to voter fraud or voter registration fraud. So they won't challenge anybody unless they happen to hear about it and have some proof of it. Is that a correct assumption?
I wouldn't characterize it quite the way you just did, no. because, you know, the whole focus of our activities at the county level and here at the Secretary of State's level is to keep our voter registration rolls up to date and current with voter registration changes. People, 10% of the population moves every year. So that's where we spend the bulk of our energies is keeping up with those moves from, you know, residence to residence. But remember, our state law does say that you know, it is, what is, again, let me use the term properly, registration of a person is a presumptive evidence that they have a right to vote. So with that basis, yes, we're going to keep our records clean and updated, but it does fall, you know, now remember, every single one of the county auditors is a registered voter. Right. You know, I am a registered voter. So if we have knowledge that there is, you know, a person who is a non-citizen on the rolls, for example, and registered to vote, we have a responsibility and obligation to challenge it at the very least as a registered voter. Or illegal activity, we would have that role anyway. But in our official duties and our official role, our job is to make sure everything is accurate and correct.
Okay, so then we head down the road of voting, actually voting, and you have what I understand. If you could explain a little bit about the declaration on the Washington State Online Voter Registration Form.
Mm-hmm. On all registration forms, online or paper, the voter is attesting to the fact that they are eligible to vote. So they are confirming that they are a U.S. citizen, they are over the age of 18, that they are a resident of the state of Washington, and that they are not under the supervision of the Department of Corrections at the time of registration. And all those are the four criteria for registering to vote in Washington State, and they are signing a declaration to the effect that those things are true. And if that is not true and they are fraudulently registering, then we now have a declaration that could be used against them in a court, and it would be a felony to falsify any of that information.
Who proactively checks that out? For example, the 30 days residency.
That's you know, that's one of the challenges. We don't do any kind of proactive check of any of these things. We don't check for citizenship. We don't check for the residence that you put down as your residential address. We check to see if it's an actual residence with, you know, address within the state of Washington, but we're not checking to make sure you lived there 30 days before the election. However, it is a requirement in our Constitution. So that is one of the grounds for a voter registration challenge. And we did make a law change. The legislature made a law change in 2018 that removed the number of days before an election that you could change or register to vote right up till election day. So it gets a little muckier for people that move close to an election.
I went a little too long and a little too far. We need to take a break right now. We'll be right back after the bottom of the hour.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight. Yes, your love. lovely, with your smile so warm and your cheeks.
Yes, sir.
So
good morning, and we're back right here on KGMI. And we're thanking again our sponsors, Asset Advisors, Linden Sheet Metal, and fourthcorner.com. Well, what I'd like to do, I'm here reading over a little bit of what the Fourth Corner did last weekend. I'd like to face up a little bit to the concerns of voters' perceptions about fraud in voting, in fraud or cheating, as we're calling it, in voting systems here in Washington State. So the Fourth Corner ran a survey last Sunday until about Monday, and we had about 800 respondents to the survey. And we asked Fourth Corner voters whether they thought voter fraud was going on in Washington State. And 73% of those that responded said yes. And in addition, 89% thought the same-day registration bill was bad and opened our mail-in system to fraud. And lastly, readers were asked about the college campuses in Washington being the only place besides the auditor's office to register up to election night. 90% of respondents in that case thought that would be another point of fraud capability. So the perception is obviously that fraud's occurring and may, in fact, keep some voters from voting, thus suppressing the vote, which neither Democrats or Republicans want. When we come back, we're going to take a break now. We'll be talking to the Secretary of State about that and other issues.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to
so it's pretty obvious I get into the bumper music a little bit and not move forward. So, Kim Wyman, are you still out there?
I am.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
We've got until the end of the show just to palaver and talk about, trying to make it a system that makes it easier to vote and harder to cheat. So the perceptions out there are obviously that something's going wrong. And one of the things that came to light, as far as I'm concerned, in doing a study and preparing for this show, was that since 2018, we've had a system that is legislatively dominated by the Democrats. And they came up with something that I thought it's great. It allows more access to voters. And that same day registration, which means, and you'll define it for me here in a minute, I hope, exactly what it means. But up until a certain number of days before the election, you go to the auditor's office and you can register clear up until 8 p.m. on election night. Well, legislation, I guess, at the first of the year in 2020 added, besides the auditor's office, added college campuses. And there was some legislation that I found that also specially treats nations, Indian nations. So I'm wondering what actually politically is going on here when we favor, obviously, college has been a long time a nay place for Republicans, and so have the tribes. What can we do to make it more able to be open to everyone to register up until 8 o'clock at night?
Well, let me begin with, you know, the cold hard reality in Olympia is that we have a House and a Senate and a governor that get to write laws for the state. And so if you have the majority in the House and the Senate and your governor is in your party, you pretty much can write whatever laws you want to. And so that was certainly the case in 2018 when the Democratic Party took control of the Senate and had all three, or had both chambers and the governor's office in their column. So they did pass sweeping legislation. They called it the Access Democracy package, and it involved same-day voter registration, which allows any person to walk into a county auditor's office up until 8 o'clock election night and either change or register for the first time, change your address or register for the first time. It allows people who get an enhanced driver's license or ID card who are proving citizenship to be automatically registered to vote. And it allows 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register to vote. And then once they turn 18, they are added to the rolls. So this was very sweeping legislation, and we were working very closely with the county auditors, really going back to about 2014, on creating a statewide voter registration database that was connecting all 39 counties in real time. And quite frankly, a lot of that focus was exactly for these laws. And, you know, going back to my opening remarks, our job, and I think what our state has done very well over the years, is balance accessibility and security. So if we're going to make something wide open like same-day registration, we've built in the compensating controls with that statewide voter registration system called VoteWa, which allows counties to see in real time where Charlie Crabtree is registered to vote. And if you walk into the, let's say, Skagit County Auditor's Office at 5 o'clock on Election Day and you say, I need a ballot, they can not only pull up your registration and see whether or not you've been issued a ballot, they can also see if you've returned it. So if you've returned it, they're not going to be able to issue you a ballot on Election Day. They will update your registration, and the next election it will apply.
Okay.
If, however, you haven't returned your ballot, they will cancel that original ballot that was issued to you in Whatcom County, issue you a new one in Skagit County. If both are returned, only one will be counted.
Okay. So how does one balance all of these other locations, i.e. college campuses up until 8 p.m. at night? And I believe, you know, the Lummi Nation has a capability to pick up. I'm not sure that they can register to vote. Haven't we, over the years in the mail-in system, there's been not a lot of problems. There's been problems. One of the things that always seems to happen in mail-in voting is that you have two lates. And that means that they missed the postmark date to have their ballot sent in, even though now it's free. You also have rejects of ballots based on signature, and those are never followed up on to see those that did not correct their situation, whether they're fraudulent or not. And then at the end of the day, you can go to the college campus, you can register to vote, you can vote right there. But you can't do that in a community center in Linden, Washington, or Blaine, Washington. You have to come all the way into the courthouse to be able to register on that day. Is there anything that we can that the Secretary of State's office can, push this or that legislator to do to kind of rectify and not suppress the vote in that way?
Okay, wow, you threw a lot at me there, Charlie. Okay, I'll break them all down. Let's see. Let's start, go back with the hubs, their student engagement hubs at the college campuses or voting on, well, let's start with that one first. So again, each of the 10 sites that were designated in that statute of universities and colleges across the state have to have that connection to the VoteWa system. So for them to be able to issue ballots to those students, and that's open to any person that walks on the college campus, not just students, then they have to have that real-time connectivity to VoteWa for all the reasons I talked about.
Right.
So you know if you've already issued a ballot to that voter or not. In terms of the Native American communities, if they want to have a similar setup, they would have to have that connectivity and that connection and work with the county auditor. And I believe the statute does require them to work with the governor to designate their tribal entity to be one of those locations. But I think the legislation also is really looking at just simple voter registration. It wouldn't involve that issuance of ballots. They would have to be working with the county auditor. In terms of expanding it beyond those two voting groups, You know, and I know that Senator Erickson dropped legislation to this effect. You know, essentially, if you wanted to open it up broader than your county auditor's office, you would need to essentially have voting centers designated. And counties can do that right now. If the county auditor wants to operate multiple voting centers, they can do that. The challenge is that they need to have connectivity to the internet. It needs to be reliable. And every one of those centers that you open, now you have security issues related to cybersecurity of those systems. But all of it is doable. It's just how much money the county wants to spend in that activity. So right now, as we sit here today, counties can open more than one voting center. They have to, at a minimum, have their county courthouse or county election office open as a voting center during the voting period.
So we lobby our county auditors for that kind of access to a ballot, right?
Yes, and your county commission, because the county commission is going to need to fund that activity because it is going to cost money to staff those remote sites and provide the materials for voters.
I've always been prejudiced when it comes to elections and voting and budgets.
Mm-hmm.
If you need a budget and you need funds, that's where one of the places it has to be goes, because that decides who's going to make policy on pretty much everything else that we associate with.
I really agree with you, Charlie. And the challenge for county auditors, having been one, is you're competing with, you know, law and justice. And, you know, for county commissioners, they have to weigh, do we want a public health officer? Do we want a county deputy sheriff? Do we want another clerk helping the court get through the caseload in our courts? And those are the things that the commissioners or county council members have to balance in their budget making.
Okay, so there are a number of questions I got from the readers at thefourthcorner.com. And some of them were even had to do with voting.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of making comments on some other items. So one of the things that bothers a lot of people, I would like to say about the Fourth Corner survey, by the way, 65% of those people identified themselves as Republican, and 35% of those people identified themselves as either independent or Democrat. So, granted, it was a conservative poll, but there was definite, you know, perception that there is fraud and there is kind of cheating. So, one of the things that we ran into in the questions and in working over this last election was transitory votes, people that aren't necessarily residing hither or yon. I ran across a couple of people, it looked like, you know, a mother and daughter who are living in or registered to vote in room 332 of a hotel near the airport in Bellingham. And they registered there, and 30 days later they voted there. So I'm wondering about the transitory vote system and how that can be controlled or not. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I don't know what a transitory vote system is, but I can tell you that, you know, the way our law is written, you don't have to own property, certainly, to vote in our state. And there is a residency requirement, but that residency requirement isn't saying that you are in an apartment or a house. It is just saying that you consider your residence to be whatever it is you put on the voter registration form. So it can be the tent under I-5.
Right.
You know, because you are experiencing homelessness. So a person that registers to vote in a hotel room, you know, again, this is where that voter registration challenge piece comes into, because it's not the auditor's obligation or duty to judge whether or not what a person says is true and accurate. They're attesting to that. But if you, as a registered voter, Charlie Crabtree, says, you know what, these two people don't live there. They were here one day, and now they're gone, and they're back to their residence in, you know, Ellensburg. Then you have the power to challenge that and be able to demonstrate it. And quite frankly, with the hotel room, I think it would be fairly easy to be able to show on election day whether or not they had lived there for 30 days. But you know, I am not aware of people hopping around hotel rooms around the state to try to change the outcome of elections, but that's what the voter registration challenge is in place to prevent.
Right. And then that's generally, it has to be initiated from one side or the other of the political fence rather than the auditor's office.
Correct. Right. Correct. Because, you want your county auditor to be fair and impartial, and you don't want to start having the auditor or the election director of a county to have the power to say, ooh, it looks like these 10 voters, you know, I don't think that they're eligible, so I'm going to remove them from the rolls. That would be a very scary precedent to set, because then the elected auditor would have this power to decide who was eligible to vote and who wasn't. So
no,
I think
you're
that's
right.
Really the bigger intent.
I like the county auditor here in Whatcom County, but I certainly wouldn't want to see that power, put in that particular office. So I have a question that I think is pretty good, and it's kind of a hypothetical, and you seem to be pretty good at those. So this comes from Carol. In Whatcom County, Washington State needs to increase voter verification just as Georgia has done. We need to go back to in-person voting with mailed-in ballots on request. Our Washington State voting was free of ballot harvesting. The results were faster to tabulate, and results were quick and accurate. What would be required to go back to in-person voting for Washington State?
First of all, the legislature would have to change the law. Like I said, I believe Senator Erickson did propose legislation to that effect that I don't believe got a hearing. And it would require a pretty major change in infrastructure because now we are, 14 years past conducting elections in person. So, basically you would have to spin up voting centers or polling place voting. And, back in 2004, which was the last statewide election that we had poll site voting in Washington State, you had, hundreds, probably thousands of polling places around the state where people could go and vote. And all of the personnel and the voting machines and materials to conduct that election, those have gone away with the centralized mail-in voting system. So out of the gate, you would need to pay a lot more money. But like you said, what price democracy? So let's say that we could do all of that.
Right.
We'd have to build it out. But, I would remind your listeners that while we remember polling place voting very fondly as being this great perfect system, it wasn't so perfect. And in a big election, it did take well into the early morning hours after Election Day to get results. And yes, in 1992, we did know who was the governor a lot earlier than we do today, and that's because we spent a lot of time verifying signatures and making sure that the ballots that were returned are valid and should be counted, which does delay results. But, we had problems at polling places. We had people who showed up and cast provisional ballots, for example, because they weren't in the poll book, and had those ballots counted in the 2004 election specifically. We had provisional ballots that were counted by individuals that weren't eligible to have their ballot counted. We did have problems. We had poll workers who made mistakes. We had, we had a lot of things. I think that we remember it fondly, but make no mistake, polling place voting wasn't perfect either. No voting system is, because we involve people.
Okay. So another question that came up that I thought was pretty good is, hello, Kim. We are wondering how our political affiliation could be protected when our, I imagine she means March, 2020 ballots required a declaration of this on the outside of our ballots, where our signatures and date were. They make a remark and wonder if... when a person is an independent voter, are these ballots still counted?
So remember, the only time that a Washington voter has to publicly declare their party affiliation is when they choose to participate in the presidential primary nominating process. We do not take registration that has any declaration of your party affiliation. We don't keep those records. We don't want to know if you're a Republican or a Democrat. except in the presidential primary, because that is actually the party nomination process to determine who they're going to put on the ballot in November of a presidential year. And so when you participate in that election, you are saying, I'm part of the Democratic Party, or I'm part of the Republican Party, and I'm casting a ballot to elect our nominee. And so we keep that record for 60 days in your voter registration record, and then it is removed. So it is public. People can get access to it, but after that, it's removed. And in terms of the election day mechanics, we could, you know, the county auditors could return to putting a flap over that that information, so that when it was going through the mail or a Dropbox, you couldn't see the party affiliation. But at some point, they do need to see whether you declared that you're Republican or Democrat. So we protect the constitutionally protected right of association that the political parties have for the presidential primary nominating process.
Okay. Now I'm continue to switch gears and go back and forth and all around the town. A major question was for the registration database data integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't know about, and I hope you can talk about that as well as Eric.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric isn't just the guy down the street that, you know, plays volleyball or something. It is something that you use, a new thing to me anyway, that you use to match some records for your database. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, this is a project that Washington was actually a leader on. I was personally involved with this project, and it is now a consortium of 30 states plus the District of Columbia. And we have a data matching center that we take voter registration information from the 30 member states and the District of Columbia, and we're matching just to find changes. So it was built with security in mind. So when we send our data, and really we do it about once a month, when we send our data to Eric, it is doing a one-way hash of your information. So your driver's license number is not viewed by any other state, but it is matched to see if Charlie Crabtree, you know, in Whatcom County, Washington, is the same Charlie Crabtree as the guy in Denver, Colorado. Is that the same person or not? And they're comparing, you know, data like data points like your date of birth and previous addresses. And if it does come up as a match, then it goes back to the states, and we can reach out proactively to the voter to say, hey, Charlie, it looks like you got a driver's license in Denver, Colorado. Where do you consider your residence? Where do you want to be registered to vote?
Okay.
So it helps us keep up with intrastate moves and intrastate moves. So people that move within the state of Washington or move across state lines. And this is probably the most significant thing we've done next to Vote Wah, because it really is helping us keep our rolls clean. It right. also allows us to see people who have just moved into Washington state and proactively reach out to them and offer voter registration services to them as well. So it's got a good balance of DNR, and it's got a good balance of security and access.
I got 1 minute left, and one thing I would like to clarify for people, for you to clarify for people, is when I get my son's ballot, who now lives and has lived for God knows how many years in California, what is the best way to stop him from getting ballots at my location and get him off the state rolls?
You need to let the county auditor's office know. So you can return the ballot, and you can simply write on the outside of that form, does not live here any longer, and then they can start a process of reaching out to the known addresses we have for that voter. And certainly if you know their new address, provide that information. And, you know, the county can reach out and again, make them make the choice of where do they consider their residence, and then remove them from the rolls in the other state.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your input this morning, Kim Wyman. It was great hearing from you again. It's been too long, and we will hopefully talk to you soon. This is Charlie Crabtree, Saturday Morning Live, signing off. Go out and have a great sunny day.